Hello and welcome to the TI Fluid Systems PLC full year 2020 results conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Zira, CEO and President of TI Fluid Systems PLC. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to TI Fluid Systems preliminary results presentation for 2020. I'm Bill Tezera, CEO and President of TI Fluid Systems, and I'm joined today by our CFO, Ron Hudzinski, and our Chief Operating Officer, Hans Diligens. I'd first like to say how pleased I am to have Hans on our call today. As our CEO in due time and later this year, he will be my successor. I feel fully confident of his experience and leadership and know that Hans, along with our senior leadership team, we'll continue our successful strategy and strong focus on electrification, as well as continue to do what we say we will do. As the months pass, you will hear more from Hans, and for today, he'll be available for questions during our Q&A session. In addition, I'd like to thank everyone for participating over the phone as we continue to support the health of our team and you, our audience, and the highest levels of personal safety as a result of the ongoing COVID-19 situation. So if we skip the disclaimer on slide two and take it as read, I'd like to move to slide three, the agenda. As you're familiar today, I will be taking you through the key highlights for 2020 before handing over to Ron, who will take you through the group's financial performance. Following that, and as I mentioned a few moments ago, Ron, Hans, and myself, we'll be happy to take your questions. Now on slide four, I'd like to remind you of our key investment highlights, which remain relevant today, and especially as we continue to manage successfully through the current challenges. First, we have an experienced management team with a proven track record of revenue growth, solid financial performance, and one that supports the commitment of ESG initiatives, including continued diversity inclusivity. This team remains best positioned to manage today and tomorrow's new challenges. Secondly, we are a technology leader in highly engineered automotive fluid systems with strong market positions in our products. We are the number one supplier of brake and fuel lines and the number three supplier of plastic fuel tanks globally. We have global low-cost footprint together with a strong position in China, where we have wholly owned operations. This has contributed to our success in winning global business platform awards. Thirdly, we are seeing this success carry through our electric vehicle thermal management products, systems, and plastic pressure-resistant tanks and modules, where we are strongly positioned for electrification megatrends. Number four, we continue to deliver strong revenue performance with solid margins and positive free cash flow generation, driven by our flexible cost structure, financial discipline, and experienced leadership of our management team. Now, more than in the past, it is the important environmental contributions to our products to make the global automotive market's goal of making cars cleaner and the world a better place to live. So moving on to slide six, I'm pleased to share some key highlights of the group's solid full year 2020 results. We continue to demonstrate the resilience of our business model. Our revenue continued to be solid with year-on-year performance broadly in line with global light vehicle production, despite the unprecedented and historic decline in vehicle production. As the COVID-19 pandemic began to emerge, we acted early and quickly in early March of last year to protect our employees and support our communities and healthcare workers. We also acted quickly to protect the performance of the company and continued to use our flexible cost structure and focused on cost savings and cash preservation measures early in the year to help deliver the strong positive adjusted EBIT and significant positive adjusted free cash flow. We continue to demonstrate the success of our electrification strategy with continued investment and announcements of HEV and BEV wins and exciting HEV and BEV launches, including Volkswagen's ID3 and ID4 battery electric vehicles. We also shared with you the success we are seeing with our average content per vehicle of our battery electric vehicle wins, increasing since 2008, and our leading representation level on key battery electric vehicles coming to market over the next 2 years. We have increased our commitment to ESG through the establishment of a diversity committee and assessment process for inclusivity and diversity, and we're also awarded the London Stock Exchange Green Economy Mark, recognizing the role that TI Fluid Systems plays in helping the world transition to a greener and cleaner place to live. As you can see, TI Fluid Systems' business model remains sustainable, and we continue to do what we say we would do. Turning to slide 7, where we look at global light vehicle production for 2020, we can see the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, with the market declining significantly by 16.1%. Yet, despite this unprecedented headwind, our revenue declined by only 15.9% at constant currency, or 20 basis points above global light vehicle production. Vehicle production declined in all regions, most significantly Europe and North America. Looking at Europe first, our European revenue decreased by 21% at constant currency, broadly in line with a contraction of 20.8% in the European light vehicle production. In 2020, the European market, like all global markets, continued to experience impacts from the government-mandated shutdown of industry and lockdown of population in the effect to stem the growing COVID-19 health pandemic. Our revenue in the fourth quarter saw the effects of some program ramp downs in Europe, especially for our FTDS segment, offset somewhat by the start of new HEV and BEV launches. In North America, our revenue decreased by 22.2% at constant currency against a 20.2% decline in North American light vehicle production. Our underperformance was driven by some program ramp downs in our powertrain business and our current under-indexed position on large pickup trucks and SUVs. We continue to take measures to address this historic under-indexation. Again, this is not a monthly nor a decade-long fix, and we look forward to showing progress in this area sooner than later. Asia-Pacific revenue decline was the lowest for the group. Our revenue declined by 2.5% at constant currency, whereas Asia-Pacific vehicle production declined by 11.3% for a strong outperformance of 8.8%. We continue to see positive growth opportunity, particularly with our FTDS business in China. It's important to note that we have strong market position in China, and we have held these positions for decades. China and the Asia-Pacific region as a whole continues to be a major player in the global automotive market. Moving to slide 8, as the COVID-19 pandemic emerged in early 2020, our management team was able to respond in an agile manner to the fast-changing business conditions. TI was one of the first global suppliers to mandate work from home and to implement global travel restrictions. In response to regional outbreaks, we temporarily closed our plants to protect our workers, starting in Asia Pacific and then moving to Europe and eventually North America. After several weeks of shutdown, we were able to efficiently reopen our plants in a safe manner by implementing detailed health and safety protocols, such as regular temperature checks and health screening, requiring protective facial coverings, social distancing, improved cleaning and maintenance procedures, and modified work proximities and altered shift patterns. We believe that taking these quick and decisive actions to develop and put these enhanced workplace and manufacturing procedures into place at all of our facilities around the world greatly limited the impact of COVID-19 infection across our workforce and enabled all of the group's production facilities to safely reopen in order to support production for our OEM customers. We are most proud of our collaboration with Ford Motor Company and 3M to produce AirFlex tube assemblies for powered air purifying respiratory systems, which are urgently needed to enable frontline healthcare workers to respond to the COVID-19 outbreak. The TI team supported the design, engineering, and testing to mass produce quick connectors along with the hose assembly for a new AirFlex tube solution for the PAPR system in rapid fashion, leveraging the production capabilities in the United States. And this all occurred in just a few weeks and in never before short lead times. I'm very proud of the TI team for the great work that they did on this particular project. Moving to strategy in slide 9, as many of you know, during the course of 2020, the group continued to demonstrate the significant progress we are making with our electric vehicle strategy in terms of announcing several new business wins and the launch of thermal coolant assemblies and the sole supply of the cabin comfort heat pump on Volkswagen's ID3 and ID4 battery electric vehicles. We are also pleased to share with you today that for 2020, 30% of our new business wins and approximately 3% of our 2020 revenue were on full battery electric vehicles, solidly in line with 2020 battery electric vehicle production mix of 3%. Something we are proud of accomplishing and further validation of our successful transition to electrification. We look to continue to share with you as the year progresses even more examples of our success in delivering upon our electrification strategy. And moving to slide 10, I'm pleased to share with you even some more additional metrics we use to measure our progress in our battery electric vehicle strategy, that being the accretive nature of the content per vehicle for our BEV wins compared to our ICE wins. Here you can see the continued growth in value per vehicle we are securing with our BEV new business wins, which are more than double that of our ICE product wins on average. Our 2020 battery electric vehicle new business wins averaged 135 euro per vehicle, which is 12.5% greater than that of 2018, and includes variants that were awarded having a maximum of 480 euro per vehicle, an increase of 20% versus those awards in 2018. Our battery electric vehicle new business wins continue to expand to all major production regions and diversify across global, regional, and new OEM customer groups. These wins clearly validate TI Fluid Systems' ability to deliver accretive value per vehicle on battery electric vehicles and will support our underlying revenue performance. Moving to slide 11, you can see another example, or another set of exciting metrics, which is our significant leading representation level on the 46 new BEVs launching between last year and the year 2020. We estimate to have TI product content on 67 of those new BEVs, including 50% of them with TI's electric vehicle thermal product content. This strong product representation level is even further evidence that TI Fluid Systems electrification strategy is progressing very, very well. Turning to slide 12, the group continues to support our OEM customers in their goal to reduce emissions and increase fuel economy with hybrid electric vehicles. Here you see two examples we are excited to share with you. First, at the top of the slide, shows the thermal product content and the content per vehicle of approximately 245 euro on the Jeep Grand Cherokee plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. This content consists of traditional rubber and aluminum hoses and tubes, as well as our lightweight plastic lines for the thermal management of the vehicle's hybrid electric system. On the bottom of the slide, you can see an example of the pressure-resistant HEV fuel tank we produced for the Volkswagen Passat with a content per vehicle of approximately 270 euro. This plastic fuel tank utilizes our proprietary technology to reinforce the tank to handle increased internal pressures, which occur when the HEV is operating in the pure electric mode. This design also nearly eliminates any hydrocarbon permeation from the tank by inserting the venting components into the tank during the blow molding manufacturing process. These are just a few examples of our success with hybrid electric vehicles. But now let's turn to slide 13. Today, we are pleased to announce that in 2020, 21% of our revenue came from electric vehicles. Our 2020 revenue mix included 18% of our total revenue on HEVs, which strongly outperformed the 2020 HEV production mix of 10%. On slide 14, here you can see our continued successful programs in our transition to electrified vehicles. We are proud of the fact that also in 2020, 47% of our new business awards were on electric vehicles. This high ratio of EV wins will pay off in the next few years. We believe that the growing hybrid and battery electric market trends provide significant content expansion and revenue outperformance opportunities aligned with the group's strengths in fluid handling systems. With that, let's turn to slide 15 to talk briefly about ESG, specifically E. On slide 15, we're pleased to announce during 2020 that we were awarded the London Stock Exchange Green Economy Mark, recognizing the scale of environmental benefit that TI Fluid Systems products and technologies provide to the global automotive market. As a leading global manufacturer of highly engineered fluid and thermal management systems, TI Fluid Systems enables vehicle manufacturers to sustainably reduce carbon dioxide emissions and improve fuel economy across all vehicle types, especially hybrid and battery electric vehicles. ESG is an opportunity for TI Fluid Systems. It's core to our business model and our strategy. This award recognizes the important contribution our product technologies provide to enable cleaner air and continue to support our world's transition to a greener future, making our world a better place to live. Moving to slide 16, I'd like to move next to a topic which is now most important for change, now more than ever, that being diversity and inclusion. The incidents last year in the United States raised the attention across the world to legitimately tackle systemic racism and embrace the benefits of diversity and inclusion on a worldwide basis. TI Fluid Systems takes this call to action very serious. As these incidents continued, we promptly created a diversity and inclusion committee to support our executive team in our common mission to embrace a culture that is diverse and inclusive. We have embarked on a focus of inclusion as a foundational element to our program and engaged a global cultural advisor to help shape our initiatives, which began with the assessment of 300 of our top global managers' propensity to be inclusive. It's from here we look to shape a more comprehensive approach to inclusivity, and I look forward to continuing to share our success and insights as we take this important journey forward. We remain confident that a diverse and inclusive global organization is best positioned to continue our strategy and continue to do what we say we would do. Thank you, and I will now hand it over to Ron to take you through our financial performance. Ron?
Thank you, Bill, and good morning, everyone. Turning to slide 18, you can see our revenue performance. As Bill mentioned earlier, our revenue declined year-over-year by 15.9% at constant currency, broadly in line with global light vehicle production volume declines. While we experienced dramatic swings in revenue performance variances to market volume throughout 2020, we continued to outperform automotive vehicle production in Asia-Pacific, which makes up 35% of our group's revenue. Continued launch activity in our FTDS division in China helped offset overall market weakness. As mentioned earlier, our revenue underperformance in Europe, which makes up 38% of total revenue, was largely driven by program ramp downs in the FTDS division, offset partially by the beginning launches of HEV and BEV programs. North American performance was driven by powertrain program ramp downs and the current under-indexation on large trucks and SUVs, something we are working on to improve. North America makes up 26% of the group's revenue. currency translation unfavorably impacted our revenue by approximately 1.6% in 2020. Turning to slide 19, we show our adjusted EBIT and adjusted EBITDA performance in 2020. As you can see, our margins remain solid in light of unprecedented volume declines and uncertainty during most of the year. Our adjusted EBIT was 173 million euros, representing a solid 6.2% margin. Adjusted EBITDA was 331 million euros and continued to generate a strong margin of 11.8%. This stable and strong profit margin performance continues to demonstrate that the strength and resilience of our business model and experienced management team to adjust cost in volatile volume environments. Segment revenue and adjusted EBIT margins are shown on slide 20. Starting from the left, our year-over-year FCS revenue decreased by 18.4% at constant currency to just over 1.5 billion euros. The decline in FCS revenue was largely driven by the impact of market volume reductions, specifically in European and North American markets. FCS adjusted EBIT margin was solid at 6.4%. Looking at the right-hand side of the slide to FCS, revenue declined by 12.7% at constant currency to approximately 1.3 billion euro. We experienced positive growth, particularly in China, where we continue to see benefits from the transition of fuel tanks from steel to plastic. In terms of margins, FTDS adjusted EBIT margin was also solid at 5.9%. FTDS benefited from strong operational performance and product mix driven by the increasing complexity in tank design. Overall, we maintain our blended group margin at 6.2% for 2020. Our global product diversity continued to benefit the group's performance. This contributed to delivering margins broadly in line with our expectations and exceptionally well given the overall state of market decline in 2020. Moving to slide 21, adjusted net income decreased to 14 million euros in 2020 given the overall significant decline in market volumes. On the left-hand side, we have a reconciliation of profit for the period to adjusted net income. Our adjusted basic EPS per share is 2.60 cents. Given overall strength of the group's financial position and prospects, the board approved and paid in February 2021 a 2020 interim dividend of 6.74 cents per share. And the company expects to return to its stated annual dividend policy and normal dividend payment cadence for the 2021 financial year. Turning to slide 22, and importantly, cash flow. We generated 148 million euro in adjusted free cash flow in 2020. Cash generation continues to be a strong measure of how well TI Food Systems compares to any of our peers and a strong testament for our employees' efforts during an extremely challenging and volatile volume environment. Looking at the adjusted EBITDA to adjusted free cash flow reconciliation on the left-hand side, despite significantly lower market volumes in 2020, our operations remained strong. We had a reduction in our interest payments and cash tax. The company did exceptionally well managing working capital, again, in an uncertain and volatile production environment. We continued to invest in the business with capital expenditure and research and development spending. And as a reminder, our electrification strategy involves primary existing products, capacity, and technology. So we expect our capital expenditure and research and development expenses as a percentage of revenue to remain constant with historical levels. Moving to slide 23. Net debt at the end of December was 500 million euros, a reduction of 146 million from the prior year, evidence of strong cash generation and increased cash on the books. Net leverage was 1.8 times adjusted EBITDA, totally impacted by the magnitude of EBITDA decline given the volume conditions. We continue to benefit from strong cash conversion, which continues to provide the group with capital allocation options and flexibility. As would be expected with our business strengths, we will continue to deliver through cash flow generation. Moving to slide 24. Given the increased likelihood of a prolonged recovery of global light vehicle production volumes back to the levels of 2019, the group initiated a structural fixed cost reduction program to reduce the level of fixed cost by approximately 16%. This program, unfortunately, requires a reduction in workforce of approximately 1,000 associates and the closure of 6 production locations and 2 partial closings. The cash expenditures on the restructuring program are estimated to total approximately $48 million over 2020 to 2021, and savings expected to total approximately $94 million by 2020. These actions are expected to position the company to remain competitive for a prolonged light vehicle production volume recovery, and if volumes recover quicker, it will only be that much more positive for the group. We are progressing with this restructuring program and remain confident to complete this initiative by the end of this year. Moving to slide 25. We have set out a summary of results of the extended and amend actions we took during the year to refinance our term loans and revolving credit facilities. This is only an amend and extend. There was no additional capital raise. We adjusted the euro-dollar mix of our debt by increasing our euro term loan by 78 million euros to 500 million and decreasing our U.S. term loan by $94 million to $740 million. The euro term loan interest rate increased by 100 basis points and the U.S. term loan increased by 125 basis points, both due to the market conditions at that time. Both loan maturities extended to 2024. We also closed our $100 million asset-backed loan credit facility and increased our cash flow revolving credit facility by $100 million to gain added flexibility. Moving to slide 26. Here we show in summary form the focus or priorities for capital allocation, starting from a net cash generated from operations level. Consistent with our business model, we see the continued opportunity to invest organically in CapEx and capitalized R&D in the 4% to 5% of sales range. We remain confident that our organic investment is the right level to support our overall strategy and specifically continue executing our successful electrification strategy. The group remains committed to the group's target payout ratio for annual dividends at 30% of adjusted net income, and the continued delevering towards the level consistent with UK and European peers. We also continue to evaluate our options that may benefit shareholders, including inorganic investment through acquisitions. Moving to slide 27, we set our financial outlook for 2021. Given recent market trends, we expect to continue our historic level of revenue outperformance at constant currency to be above global automotive production levels. We expect adjusted EBIT margins to be in the high single digit and adjusted free cash flow conversion to be similar to pre-2020 levels. We plan to continue to reduce net leverage through strong cash flow generation and maintain a minimum 30% of adjusted net income dividend policy. Now, let me turn it back to Bill for a few quick summaries. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate that. So in summary, 2020 was an extremely volatile and challenging year from a global automotive vehicle production perspective, given the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Despite these challenges, our experienced management team was able to continue to demonstrate the company's business resilience, execute well on our electrification strategy, as well as continued focus on important ESG initiatives. We continue to deliver solid profit margins and strong free cash flow generation, which has positioned the group well going forward. I'm very pleased with our group's 2020 performance and the great progress that we have made on electrification transition. So with that, I'd like to open the phone line for any of your questions, and our operator, Nash, will now help facilitate our questions. Operator?
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal for questions. We have our first question from Mr. Gabriel from Citi. The line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good morning, Bill, Ron, and Hans. It's Gabriel Adler from Citi. I have three questions, please. My first question is on the 2021 outlook. On outperformance, you've talked about continued outperformance. In the past, you've spoken about around 200 to 300 basis points as being a sort of normal outperformance target in normal conditions. Is this how we should be interpreting the outperformance range for 2021? And then on the margin guidance, I understand you don't want to specify a margin target, but maybe instead you could perhaps comment on how operating leverage might develop in 2021. In the past, you've talked about operating the business at 25 to 30% operating leverage. Is that what you expect going forward, taking into account the cost-cutting measures? That's my first question. My second question would be just whether you could provide a quick update on how Q1 has been trending, particularly any impact you're seeing from chip shortages, seeing as we're now nearly halfway through March. And my final question, perhaps one for Hans. Maybe, Hans, you could talk a little bit about your ambitions as the incoming CEO for TI's electric vehicle strategy. Today, TI is generating 3% of its revenues from battery electric vehicles. By 2025 and 2030, where would you hope this metric to be? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I'll take the first question. I'll then turn over to Ron for the second question on margin guidance on operating leverage and to talk about the Q1, and then I'll turn over to Hans for him to speak about his ambitions as the incoming CEO of this company later this year. So first on the 2021 outlook, you know, our outperformance, we expect in 2021 in the short term to be consistent with that 2 to 3% outperformance in the near term. You know, 2020 was an unusual year, and our outperformance was a little bit different than what it has historically been, but we would expect in 2020 to resume to our consistent outperformance level for the group. Ron, you want to handle the second question, please?
Sure, Bill. The company's been able to have good gearing, as you saw in 2020, where for every lost euro sale, we lost around 28% of EBIT. So as revenue comes back into the business and we continue to manage our fixed costs, which is very low relative to a lot of our peers, we would expect that the gearing would generate anywhere from, say, 25 to 30% EBIT for every additional revenue we see going into 2021. We do some math that would then produce a high single-digit margin profile. We're pretty proud of the way this company has been resilient and flexible of being able to manage the volumes up and down, so we would continue to see that gearing going back up. Bill, there's one more question before maybe get to Hans about the chip shortage maybe impact, then maybe turn it over to Hans next.
Sure.
Yes, please. Good morning. This is Hans. So my or the company's ambition going forward for electrification strategy, I view this on the long term to align with the market mix, or as we historically have shown, to outperform the market mix, which will be discussed in more detail at our Capital Markets Day. So I believe the company has shown and has just shown also a very strong and good strategy when it comes to electrification, and it is obviously my goal to continue with that strength and to continue building on the activities that have happened historically. I have been a significant part of building the strategy for the electrification, so I am in all details aware and will continue to support that going forward.
Thanks, Hans. Ron, you want to come back to the chip shortage situation in Q1?
Well,
Do you want to
answer it, but you want me to address the chip
shortage? No, I'm happy to answer it. I mean,
okay,
basically, as you can imagine, we have a variety of customer OEM callbacks as a result of the chip shortage affecting their vehicle production. It is a manageable reduction in revenue, I'll say, for the first quarter. It's fairly insignificant for TI Fluid Systems, and we would fully expect that, there's a lot of runway left in the year to make up for any lost production units that would have occurred in the first quarter when we look at the capabilities of the second quarter, third, and fourth quarter. So we do not lose any sleep at night over this chip shortage issue at TI Fluid Systems. Okay, next question, please.
Next question is from Mr. Harry Phillips from Peel Hunt. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Many thanks. Good morning, everyone. Very early morning for some of you. Just a couple of questions, please. Just in terms of how you address your sort of under-index into North American light truck SUV, how long does that take to sort of recover, if you like, and improve? The cost savings on the restructuring are obviously very impressive, 94 million against a spend of 47 million euros. Should we expect anything more in the current year? And then just lastly, in terms of leverage, I mean, where in terms of broader capital allocation, where do you think your leverage ought to be and sort of how you play dividends and potential share buybacks, please?
Okay. Good morning, Harry, and I'll happy to answer the first two questions and then turn it over to Ron. The under-index situation in North America, as we've said before, is a result of the fact that the company has historically focused on global platforms, which is has been one of our strengths. And so, therefore, we have not historically had a strong position on the regional unique full-size pickup truck and SUV market. Now, as we've seen this under-indexation continue to work against us over the last couple of years, we have responded with, our target of working on opportunities in the full-size pickup truck and SUV area. And, we expect, as I mentioned earlier, to come back to you fairly soon with some good news on some areas where the company has been able to compensate for that so that we don't have that challenge in North America going forward. So it's not going to take very long in answer to your question, but we appreciate your continued patience as we focus on that. In terms of the cost savings on the restructuring and will we have any benefit of it in 2021, I'll let Ron comment on that, as well as the leverage level that we expect to move to. But before I turn over to Ron, I would just like to reiterate that, the company is totally committed to the dividend policy that we have had in place. And while 2020 was a little bit of a unique situation, we are committed to paying a dividend on an annual basis going forward of 30% of adjusted net income. We would expect that to, benefit our shareholders in 2020, where the first opportunity or the next opportunity would be for a 2021 interim dividend that typically is declared in the September of 2021 timeframe. So stay tuned on that, but we remain very committed, and I'm personally very hopeful that this company, as it generates quite a bit of cash, can continue to share that with its shareholders through our strong dividend policy. Ron, you want to cover the other items, please.
Yeah, I just on the cost savings, Bill, before the capital allocation. On the cost savings, Harry, the primary reason for the cost savings, like I said in my script, was to get back to double-digit margins at a much quicker rate than waiting back for the 2019 market volumes. And that's how we came up at the 16%. We did a calculation of the outlook of what it would take to get back to double-digit margins. With that said, we're on plan. About half of those 1,000 associates are, I would say, staff level, and the other half is the plant reductions. We're implementing those in 2021. As we said earlier, those individuals and plants are in higher cost locations, and some of them are in Europe, which require notification periods. And those notification periods are underway, and we'll execute those things through 21. The full benefits of that will not be seen until 2022, primarily because of the timing of what it takes to do these. We'll see some benefits, and we'll give you more clarity as in the first half results in 21, but the majority overall, like 80-90%, will be in 22. So with that, I'm going to move on to cost allocation and leverage, and then I think you mentioned buybacks. Let me just talk about our priorities first on capital allocation. There's a priority level, right? And the first priority, obviously, is to grow the business and capitalize R&D and CapEx, which we give you a range of 4-5% of our sales. That's our first priority. As Bill just said, our next priority is 30% of our adjusted net income as dividend payouts. And that's really the minimum target at this point. The third priority is to deleverage the company. And the range that we typically would like to find ourselves in is between 1 to 1.5x, which is debt to EBITDA. We finished last year, 2019, at 1.5. We were up to 1.8 at the end of 2020, but that was all merely a function of the EBITDA calculation in that formula. And if you really take a look at it, it was really the second quarter. As we move forward, that leverage is going to come down significantly once that second quarter of 2020 drops off. We are going to delever the company this year because the EBITDA increase alone will allow us to delever. So that between 1 to 1.5, we feel is a very good range, being an automotive supplier, and is in line with our peers, our European peers. The other item you mentioned is buybacks. I would say that's the lowest priority. M&A is ahead of that priority. We're going to look at M&A inorganic growth, looking at adjacent technologies, all technology-driven to support our HEV and BEV strategy. Then after that would be the buybacks. Buybacks currently, given the capital structure and ownership structure, really makes no sense, quite frankly, with a large shareholder. And like I said, that would be our last priority when we pretty much don't have anything to do with our cash, or we feel the company is significantly undervalued, which we do now, but we have other priorities for that cash. Any other questions, Harry?
Okay, if not,
we will take the next question. Yes, we have from Alva Fernandez from StockViews. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, hello everyone. I wanted to ask a couple of questions regarding the content per vehicle that you provided on some of the examples today. So for example, in slide 9 regarding the ID3 and ID4, you showed a range of 80 to 46 of content per vehicle. And I was wondering whether there was any content variability with the cars within the same program. The next question would be on the Passat hybrid. You suggested that it was 270 euros in content. My question is that only the fuel tank? And finally, it is my understanding that the CO2 heat pump has a very high content for you, and so far it's only been used in the ID3 and ID4. And the question would be, are you receiving any interest from other OEMs on this technology? Thank you.
Yeah, this is Bill Cazera. I think I'll start off in answering those questions, and then maybe have Ron chime in if you'd like. So the examples of content that we provided on the ID3 and the ID4, of course, you know, there's a whole variety of different vehicles in those family of vehicles, and we have ranging content on those programs. But we're really pleased with the fact that we have quite a bit of electric vehicle thermal content on those platforms that manages the heating and the cooling of the batteries, as well as other electric vehicle components. And in addition, on those vehicles, we have the heat pump, the CO2 heat pump, which is a very high content product that we supply. And, you know, we are, in fact, seeing other OEMs now resort to the heat pump technology, and we have been successful with that product line area with other awards. And we'll actually talk about those in our Capital Markets Day in more detail. The Passat HEV platform, where we talk about €270 content, I believe that's just the pressure-resistant fuel tank, but I'll ask Hans if he can confirm that or clarify that, please. Hans?
Yes, this is mainly the fuel tank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as you recall, to remind the group here that, you know, a hybrid electric fuel tank has the potential in many cases to be content rich and have a content level that's 2 or 2.5 times the content level of a standard internal combustion engine fuel tank. So this is where we're seeing a higher content per vehicle on hybrids for our pressure-resistant fuel tanks. And keep in mind, as we reported previously, you know, TI has a leading design and process for these pressure-resistant fuel tanks, that being that we can mold the tank in our manufacturing process to be have the internal reinforcements inserted during the blow molding process, and therefore there's no post-molding, gluing, or welding of any reinforcements on the tank assembly. And as a result, our design is such that the engineers at the OEMs find it preferred design, and therefore our win rate and our trend on market share for these pressure-resistant fuel tanks is greater than 20% and quite a bit higher than our standard fuel tank market share on a global basis. So we're pretty excited about the great technology that our engineers have developed for these hybrid vehicles, which will benefit us quite a bit in the near term. And while hybrid electric vehicles, you know, are not necessarily a long-term propulsion technology for the car manufacturers, because they do, in fact, have two propulsion systems on them, and that drives additional cost, we would fully expect that quite a few hybrids are going to be produced and sold in the near term. And as we've said many times before, that gives TI Fluid Systems quite a bit of tailwind in terms of our ability to provide more value and outperform global auto production. Ron, is there anything you want to add to that?
The only thing I would add, Bill, in your answer here on page 6, the ID3, ID4, there's a range that says €80 to €460. I just want to be more clear on what that is. Bill actually mentioned this. There's different options or variants of those vehicles. For example, you can purchase a vehicle without the CO2 cabin heat pump. So that would be on the lower end. If you took that option, it would be the €460. I just want to make sure it's clear in the answer of why we have a range there as opposed to just a point number. That's all, Bill.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Any other questions?
Next questions. Dom Convenumis, please go ahead.
Good morning, gents. Just a follow-up question, if I may, around the electrification progress. You've given some helpful data today. This 50% of new wins that have thermal content, I'd just be keen really to hear your thoughts about where you see that trending. And secondly, in terms of the 47% of new business wins last year, I'd be keen to hear your thoughts about your new business pipeline, what that looks like going into 2021-22, specifically around mix and perhaps values if you're willing to. And then just in terms of quick fire follow-up questions, just any broader observations you can make about input cost inflation, specifically raw materials. And finally, perhaps Ron, if you could just remind us of the FX sensitivity, specifically sort of dollar versus euro.
Okay. Well, I'll start and then turn it over to Ron. Needless to say, we're very pleased with the metrics that we have released externally, you know, over the last 6 months to validate that our electrification strategy has been very successful and continues to be successful. And when we look at this 46 key battery electric vehicles that will be introduced between last year, this year, and next year, and the fact that we have a TI Fluid Systems product on 67% of those, and we have actually electric vehicle thermal content on 50% of those, you know, we believe that's very, very, very strong indication of our success in electric vehicles. Now, in the long term, we would not expect necessarily that we could maintain a 50% representation on thermal products of, you know, electric vehicles. But if you looked at this three-year snapshot of these 46 key programs in launches, you know, it validates the hard work that we have put into our electric vehicle strategy over the last 5 years, that our specific focus on particular OEMs and on particular technologies around our lightweight nylon material, which is something the company has, you know, inherent capabilities and know-how in manufacturing processes for, you know, is a real strength of the company. You know, our long-term goal, just to be clear, our long-term goal for electric vehicles is to be able to maintain that number one leading share that we have enjoyed for decades on our traditional business. Now, when we look at the new business wins last year, you know, we were very pleased that 47% of our wins last year were on electric vehicles. And as I said, that's going to really help set the stage now for electric vehicle launches that will start, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, and then carry into 4, 5, and 6 years from now. Now, the pipeline continues to be quite strong for 2021 and 2022 when we look at the opportunity for electric vehicles. And as you know, many OEMs have announced that they will now move quicker to electric vehicles as they, you know, move away from the internal combustion engine vehicles. That actually is a very positive development for TI because, as we said numerous times, there's more fluid handling content on an electric vehicle than there is on an internal combustion engine. So this gives us now additional tailwind in terms of our top-line revenue growth and our ability to outperform the global auto production. And so we're really excited about the trends around electrification. We continue to believe they'll be very positive for the company. We've given you metrics that validate how they're going to be positive with our average content per vehicle and our maximum content per vehicle growing from 2018 to 2020. And quite frankly, we see that trend continuing. So the outlook is quite exciting. We will continue to execute on our strategy, which has proven to be very effective and very successful. And I would expect that we will continue to report out our successes as they come into production and we can officially talk about the one or the other new vehicle by nameplate and give you more color around our exciting growing content per vehicle for these electric vehicles. Now, I'll turn it over to Ron to talk about your last question around the input cost, inflation, and foreign exchange topics. Ron?
Thanks, Bill. I'll talk about raw materials first. There's been a lot of discussion of late of the input costs around steel or metals in general, and you're seeing it in plastics and rubber, for example. I would say at this point in the first half of the year, we've been having discussions with operations that these costs are coming. But you have to keep in mind that we have contractual price in, from our suppliers, and we're able to pass through price increases given our contracts to our customers, albeit on a delayed basis. So as we start to see these inputs start to climb, we'll be in discussions with our customers on pass-through and on contracts. It's I can't give you exactly the timing of every single material and every single customer. Every customer is different. Every material is different. And it's also different from the supply chain for us as well. But net-net, the company's done a very good job to keep net price increases, very minimal impact on the company, but there might be a delay as far as our recoveries, but the company has done this very well in the past. Our contracts are attuned to getting pass-through agreements to our customers, and we're already having discussions internally to get prepared for these discussions. Next thing I'd like to move to is FX, and a little bit of a not history, but a little bit of a training class here. There's several types of FX impacts on an organization. The most common one is the translation impact that it has. Then there's transactional. I'm going to talk about both. The first is translation. We report our financial results in euros. That means that when the euro increases against the dollar, which is where we do a lot of our transactions in U.S. dollar, we would have unfavorable translation as the euro strengthens, which it did in 2020. And I disclosed it had a 1.6% unfavorable impact on our top line, or about 64 million euros. So as you see the euro strengthening, that will have an unfavorable impact. Our impact on margin is relatively the same as the operating margin number, if you want to do the calculation on that. The next impact that we have is the transactional side, and there we have two things coming at us. One is the settlement of transactions with suppliers or in our customers when we sell something in a different denomination of what we settle the transaction in. Typically, on those, we try to align them and become naturally hedged with other types of imports and imports of those transactions and currencies. But we do have inside the company intercompany loans that at times are not hedged properly. And in 2020, you actually saw a gain of FX related to intercompany loans, which we took out of our results to our adjusted numbers. In other words, we didn't take the credit for that to our adjusted EBIT numbers. So there's really two types, and within the one type, there's the two types of transactions that can happen. In general, the company's philosophy is to the best of our ability, is to try to hedge these types of transactions. But as I said, in 2020, our intercompany loans did create a benefit for us. And for 2021, we aren't working on trying to hedge that position that we have going forward. Hopefully that answers your question.
Thanks, Ron. Other questions?
Next question from Jarek Pominkiewicz from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Two for me, if I could. Given that in terms of your regional performance, you only commented on BEV and HEV contribution in terms of Europe, am I right to assume that at the moment these two businesses for you are European focused, and with that, are we likely to see more from North America and Asia over time? And the second one, with the share of revenue mix for BEVs in line with the global production and HEVs significantly in excess, but overall your revenue is coming broadly in line with production, am I right to infer that your content on ICE vehicles has declined? And is it down to the platform ramp downs that you mentioned for Europe and North America, or is there anything else we should bear in mind? Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you for those questions. First of all, I just want to remind everybody that the EV and HEV performance and the metrics we give you are global metrics. They're not unique to the European region.
while we talk about this, you know, high volume Volkswagen platform, you know, that's just one of many electric vehicles that we have been awarded. And we can talk about this one now because, quite frankly, it was just introduced into production. And out of respect for our customers, we don't talk about their platforms until, you know, they first splash it in the industry. So our numbers are global metrics. They are not unique to Europe. Now, with respect to our revenue in 2020 in battery electric vehicles being in line and HEVs being, you know, quite a bit over-indexed, that does not mean that our ICE products are on decline. You know, we continue to enjoy a very strong business around internal combustion engines, and we would expect that to continue as there's a lot of internal combustion engine products and vehicles that will be produced, you know, over the next, say, you know, decade and a half. So we view our strategy around electric vehicles to complement our internal combustion engine products, and we believe that you know, we have the flexibility to go either way or to handle different mix going forward. And if the mix increases to more electric vehicles and fewer internal combustion engine vehicles, then that will be a positive development for the company. And certainly, we're all reading a lot about electric vehicles and the growing trends around electrification. I think we all know that there continue to be challenges around electric vehicles in terms of their growth potential with respect to infrastructure, battery capacity, battery range, consumer anxiety around battery range, and these factors now will all be fleshed out over the next few years. So the actual rate by which electric vehicles are going to grow, I think, is yet to be determined. But we do see an increasing trend, and it's positive development for the company. Next questions.
We have a follow-up question from Harry Phillips. Please go ahead.
Hi, sorry to be back on the line again. excuse me. Just more on the plastic fuel tank situation in China. Clearly, if I remember rightly, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, steel had a or rather Plata had a 55% market share, and that was rising very rapidly. Could you just update where plastic is in terms of that market and the pace of transition?
Sure, Harry. I'd like to ask Hans Dilgen to speak of that, as he had spent most recently time in the FTDS division and would be very close to those details with our very strong plastic fuel tank business in China. Hans?
Yes. Well, about 1.5-2 years ago, we announced that the plastic share was about 60% in China, where we could see that over the last period, this has grown now to 73% due to the lightweight necessity of it. China has also launched the China 6 legislation, which is a new legislation, very strict legislation on emissions, and therefore the requirement for weight reduction, but also for lifetime expectation of the fuel tank system, as these emissions need to be kept over the lifetime of the vehicle. So we do see a strong increase in the plastic fuel tank or in the transfer of the steel tank to the plastic fuel tank.
So Harry, just to summarize, there's two dynamics there in China driving plastic fuel tanks. One is the historical move to plastic from steel. But then on top of that, as Han said, we've got this increased regulation that in China that is driving now more sophisticated fuel tanks around the, you know, the zero emission and so forth that give us a second dimension to the increased growth and enhanced content for fuel tanks, plastic fuel tanks in China. Okay, any other questions?
It appears there are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back to Mr. Bill Kozira for any additional or closing remark.
Okay, thank you, operator. So if there are no further questions, and in closing, you know, we're extremely pleased with our results for 2020.
and all the hard work and commitment of all the employees of the company have and will continue to make as we navigate through these new times we are in addressing, you know, the ongoing pandemic. The business environment continues to head in a positive direction, and I remain confident in our future. I also want to remind everyone that we will be holding a virtual 2021 Capital Markets event on April 13th, and we look forward to sharing some further insights into our business performance, our technologies and new technologies, and our continued success in electrification. I'm really excited about this event, and I really hope and encourage you to attend. Finally, we do hope we will once again be back in the beautiful city of London and hopefully other European countries in person for our 2021 H1 results announcements. And at the time, I look forward to being able to formally introduce you to Hans Diligens, who will join Ron and I for those face-to-face meetings. So with that, thank you all for joining us today. Have a great day, a great week. And with that, operator, you can disconnect the call. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.